Hello and welcome to Argue the Toss at GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew, and together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games and films and stuff.
Indeed we are, and it is Season 4, Episode 22.
Indeed it is.
What's our topic, Drew?
This is the second go we've had it trying to record this episode. The first one was lost to a technical disaster. Yeah. We did a whole, my memory of it was that it was a brilliant episode. It was maybe one of the best we've ever done.
Yeah, it was a classic. Yeah,
exactly, but unfortunately, it's lost to time and electronic static.
Yeah, kind of like the original Great Gatsby.
Yeah, exactly. We are talking about the first episode of Life is Strange 2, which was released, quite a while ago now.
Yeah,
the end of September. Mm-hmm. And it kind of slipped out without, like, I didn't notice it coming out. It was a few days later that I just happened to see it on the PlayStation store. I hadn't seen much build up for it, which I was quite surprised by.
Yeah, I'd been waiting, and yeah, I think I said, "Oh, it's Life is Strange this weekend." You were like, "What crap?"
Yeah.
So yeah, there hasn't been much buzz around it, but I don't know what came out then. Was it Assassin's Creed? And then everyone was looking forward to Red Dead, and
yeah
it kind of slipped between the cracks of like really big games. So,
yeah, it's been a pretty dense release season.
Yeah, but I think because it's episodic, I think people will like pick it up when an episode comes out in a slow season and maybe pick up the box set or whatever and maybe binge it.
I mean, that's what I did with the original series. So.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. I went episode by episode. I was, waiting on tenterhooks for every episode of that. So, and I'm a bit like that with this one. Yeah, because so far, so good. I really love it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the first episode.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the first, season one, the original Life is Strange, and it had me hooked all the way through. But this is a much stronger episode, I think, than episode one of the first game.
Yeah. And, speaking of which, if you want to go back and listen to our opinions on Life is Strange, we have done an episode on the first season. We did one on the entire first season, didn't we? And kind of analyzed what we thought of the story, which, I don't think we need to kind of cover again here.
No.
Except that we liked it with some caveats, I think.
Should we give a precis of the story?
Yeah, I think we will, but before I do that, let's talk about our spoiler policy. We are going to be talking about the plot and the characters. We are going to be spoiling later in the episode. We will put up a spoiler wall, as usual, before we start talking about the real kind of significant details. We'll keep it sort of, not vague, but non-specific until about halfway through the episode, where we'll warn you in advance that we're going to start talking about the story, because I don't think we can sort of discuss this without discussing the specifics of the story, because they are so important to it.
I think we're not going to go like full spoiler, but we're going to talk about the differences in some of our choices and stuff like that. It's basically, it's in the Life is Strange universe. It's in the same part of the country. It's up around Seattle, in small town America, in that part of America. And this time we have two Mexican American brothers, Sean and Daniel. Sean is the player protagonist, and Daniel is his little brother. Basically, something happens very early on in the game and they become runaways. And that's the basic premise. There's no time rewind mechanic, which I mean, the sort of the magical or supernatural element of Life is Strange, the original one, was laid out very early on in the game, and it isn't the case with this one. It's a little bit more of a mystery.
It is. I don't think it's as bold as to say that there is a magical kind of supernatural element in this. It is shown in kind of like the first cutscene, but very obliquely, and you're not quite sure what's going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, you know it's strange.
Yeah, yeah. It has more of a Stranger Things type feel to it in that
It kind of definitely does.
Yeah. So that's the basic premise. I think in terms of the opening scene is really, really interesting and much more cinematic than previous Life is Strange episodes, I think. You get this view through the windscreen of a police car.
Yeah, it's like a dash cam, isn't it?
And it's just a really intriguing opening because you aren't looking directly at the action. Mm-hmm. You're just looking at the effects of something happening off screen, which is really interesting. So that's how you know pretty much immediately that something strange is happening in this otherwise ordinary looking world in an ordinary neighborhood in Northwest America. But it's a real hook. It really hooks you in straight away. And I was just like, I'm up for this.
Absolutely. I think I was exactly the same from the beginning. I was like, oh, this is much more cinematically done than kind of Life is Strange. The first season often managed to do those moments, but they were a little bit less confident in themselves. They were they weren't quite as good. And this one starts very strong right out of the gate, which is...
Because the original had that sort of indie, sort of Sundance film kind of feel, you know, sort of...
Mumblecore.
Yeah, it was that kind of feel, whereas this, is just like a stronger cinematic vision, which is quite interesting. And then you get the sort of familiar Life is Strange territory of teenagers, you know, just chatting about school stuff and worrying about first dates and, you know, going to a party and, you know, talking to the girl they like and all that sort of stuff, which I really loved.
Mm-hmm.
I like Sean more than I ever liked Max. I found Max really irritating. She was just like sort of achingly awkward, which just got on my nerves. It just felt too self-conscious. That she's the awkward outsider, but Sean felt a bit more natural to me
as
a character.
I think a lot of that is down to kind of improvements in the writing. Something I noticed, like, it still hasn't gotten rid of that Life is Strange thing, which kind of pervaded season one, especially early on, where it didn't quite sound like teenage dialogue. It sounded like adults writing kind of TV teenage dialogue. And I don't think the series has ever kind of completely gotten away from that, but it did sort of improve over the course of the first season. It's still there now, but the characters are much more believable and they're much more kind of well-rounded, I think.
When I was sitting watching the credits go by, I noticed that Steve Gaynor and Carla Zimonia, from Fulbright are on the writing credits. You can definitely feel that because it's the writing is much stronger and, like you say, more confident. And I loved Daniel and his friend, Lila. She's like, it's that typical dynamic of, you know, he's the shy one and she's like this confident one who helps set him up on a date for there's this party at somebody's house. Their dynamic is just really cool and really lovely.
Yeah. They're kind of portrayed as the kind of stoner, well, not stoner couple, but stoner friend couple of their kind of peer group, which is kind of nice in contrast to Max, who often felt a little bit too innocent, naive, and kind of Like, yeah, I just wouldn't say boo to a goose.
Right.
The, like, these actually feel like, you know, real teenagers.
Like,
with
real teenagers.
Yeah.
In the real world.
A surprising amount of, like, kind of the prologue is about them finding weed.
Yeah, and his dad saying is, yeah, when he asks for money, it's like, is it for weed or something like that? Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a really nice moment because you can choose to be honest about that. And if you are honest about it, the dad has kind of a, like, a very nice, very sort of charming reaction to it. Mm. And he kind of just gives you more money for being honest.
Yeah. So I guess, yeah, we get into the dad and Daniel.
And Daniel as well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Daniel's our kind of deuteragonist here. He's kind of the inexperienced sidekick. Well, not much of it. Not a sidekick, but the inexperienced mm-hmm. secondary character who mm-hmm. you end up on this journey kind of leading along and being the big brother for.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he's introduced as just kind of a... Like, in the first scene, at least, he's kind of just an average, irritating little brother.
Yeah.
Which is the intent. I'm not saying that's, like, sort of slack writing or anything.
No, he's not Scrappy-Doo.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
He's just kind of there. He's not a huge part of the first act. A lot of the kind of incidental dialogue involves him. But he spends most of it just in his room until kind of the end.
Yeah. And he's not an irritating character. That Sean is irritated by him because it's his little brother and we are Sean. But you can see Daniel's side, and Lila is like, oh, give him a break. He's you know, they have a good relationship, Lila and Daniel. So they set up a really nice dynamic and the beginning of a relationship arc, basically, really nicely.
Yeah.
And so then there's the dad. I can't remember what the dad is called.
Esteban.
Yeah, he's just lovely.
He is the nicest dad you'll ever meet. He's just the nicest guy.
Yeah.
It immediately, sort of, the first couple of sentences of his introduction that you just love this guy, and you think, right. I wish my dad was like this. This would be the best dad to have, someone who is, like, he's really good with both his kids.
Yeah.
Like, he will give you money for weed if you ask. He is just very caring. He's a single dad, and he's putting the effort in and doing a lot to raise his kids properly.
Yeah, he works hard. He's engaged in their lives.
Yeah.
But without being sort of, you know, little house on the prairie kind of dad. He's not sort of, you know, it's not a sentimental portrayal of a good dad. He's just really nice.
He's really nice. He's really charming. Yeah. Spoiler, something happens
to him.
You
can feel it coming.
It's immediately apparent that you're in this, and you go, this guy cannot be around very long.
No, because he's too much of a cohesive kind of hub for these two boys to stay in this story. So something happens, and that's basically the catalyst. But yeah, there's lots of lovely moments with them, and there is this kind of mystery about the mother. We don't know. Yeah, so the mother is absent, which is really interesting, especially with, you know, characters of color. It's normally the father that is assumed to be an absent parent. So yeah, it's really nice that they've done that. We haven't got to the bottom of that yet. There are different sort of hints, and there are little layers of story come in, which I won't, you know, go into. But it's a single parent family, and the dad is the one who is there. I expect something might come up of the mother again. I'm not sure. But when they become runaways, their aim is to go back to where their father came from. Which is really nice. They just have a name of a place kind of thing that he used to talk about, where he came from. So Where next?
I mean, we've talked about the opening act. That is kind of, it is a smaller part of the larger episode, which mostly consists of kind of a journey through initially the woods and then some places further on. But I think the main thing you're going to take away from this episode is kind of the woods journey and the camping and the. Mm-hmm. So these two characters, as we've said, they become runaways, and it's kind of the two of you making your way on foot through the forests of the upper northwest, which are, I think we should say, gorgeous. Especially, it's in real life and in the game, they're really kind of beautifully rendered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's a beautiful looking game.
Yeah.
And during that camp scene, it allows you those Life is Strange moments, which I did this in the first game as well. There's a moment where you think it's a cut scene, and it kind of is, but it's a scene that you have to end.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you could just sit there eternally looking at a beautiful sunset.
Yeah. Because
there was that scene with Max and Chloe where they're lying on a bed, and you have to get up to end that scene.
Yeah.
And I was in that scene for ages. I was like, wow, this is going on quite a long time.
Yeah.
And I did that. There's a bit where you're sitting on a rock together. The two brothers are sitting on this rock. They've set up camp, which is just in the lee of a rock, an overhanging rock, by a river. And you can sit on top and watch the sun go down, type thing. And it's like a cute, beautiful, sort of picture box moment. So you get those Life is Strange moments to look at the beautiful scenery they've created, and the sort of music plays over the top and stuff.
Yeah. I think that just is a really nice kind of, it's not a mechanic, it's just a mini feature, that sort of just leaving you to end the cutscene as soon as you had enough of it. Because you do stare at that sunset for a while before you realize, oh, okay, I have to end this.
Yeah,
and it kind of automatically lets you sort of edit the cutscene yourself.
Yeah,
this is how long I want to look at this sunset.
It is, it's really nice, because, there is often where you're like, oh, I want to go back to that place.
Yeah.
And games don't let you because they've kind of orchestrated that. But yeah, it is really nice that you can just sit in that moment and then go, oh, wait, okay, wake up, let's get back on with the journey. It's really nice. So there's that's a nice scene in the sort of setting up camp scene. And you start to see the trajectory of the relationship between the brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we said at the beginning, Sean is irritated by Daniel, but then that has to change when he becomes responsible for Daniel. Mm. And, they start having conversations about, the way that Sean's always mean and, impatient. And it's really nice, seeing them try to bridge that gap, because they're not that close in a lot of ways because of that. There are some really nice moments in there of brothers trying to rebuild a bond with each other.
Yeah. And having looked at the sort of choices after the fact, because as is kind of par for the course for these games, now they give you a rundown of all the choices you could make, and you can kind of compare them with the percentage of players who have done this, or you can compare it with your friend list. There are multiple different ways that scene can turn out. It's not for you and I that it ended up being kind of a nice time, despite kind of some disagreements, you kind of come at it all right. But there is an alternative ending to that where they're kind of not happy with each other.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Because there is this underlying thing where you're sort of lying to protect your little brother, because he keeps asking, where's dad, when is he coming, and all those sorts of things. So you're trying to build this bridge whilst also knowing that you're not telling him the entire truth, and you know that's going to come back to bite you on the ass.
Yeah.
But you do it anyway. So there's this added tension to the whole thing, which is just really great. Just sort of adds to the tension of the choices, and it's like, well, I could tell him and just like rip the bandage off, kind of thing. It's beautifully crafted in that way to make your choices harder.
It's got something which I don't think the original Life is Strange ever did, is that it forces you to make decisions due to your cash flow situation. So there is like a money system in the game. It is counting how much money you have, and like I don't think there's a wide range of how much money you can have at any certain point in the game, but you do have to make decisions about what you can buy now, what extra supplies you can buy, whether they're going to make a difference. I think the way that's handled is very good, because it then propagates into the next scene where how are you going to keep Daniel happy if you don't have enough food, for example.
And obviously he wants a candy bar or a chocolate bar or whatever, and because he doesn't realize, because you haven't told him what's happened, and you're trying to make friends with him as well and get him to go along and walk further and things like that. So you're trying to appease him, but then you've got to be sensible, there's this scene where you get to, it's like a, I don't know, hiking shop type thing, like a traveler's rest type shop, with maps and loaves of bread, overpriced bread and stuff like that, and then teddy bears and camping gear. So what annoyed me, because I really like camping, I camp a lot, we were by a river, like a nice fresh mountain river, and we had bottles in our bag, but we didn't, and then we were asked if we wanted to buy water, and the water was so expensive. I was like, but we've just left a river, like what is going on? I was really annoyed that we didn't have water with us already, because he's like, oh, we're gonna need water and all this sort of thing. It's like, yeah, there's like a mountain river that we just slept next to all night. And then soda, like fizzy drinks, were so much cheaper than water, so I ended up buying like lemonade or something. I spent ages in the shop going, because I was like, okay, we are gonna need a tent, we're gonna need a sleeping bag, and they were both like, oh, but that's gonna be all my money if I buy those now. And so I think I bought a sleeping bag but not a tent.
I think I was the same.
I've
forgotten, but the game doesn't actually record in the outro choices what you bought, which is irritating.
That would be good if it did, to see what different people bought. There was a chance to buy him like a hoodie, because it's getting cold, isn't it? It's like end of summer, beginning of the autumn term kind of thing, isn't it, at school. So I can't remember if I did. I think I might have bought him the hoodie, I'm not sure. But I definitely didn't have enough for a tent.
No.
I was like, I'll buy a sleeping bag, because at least we can both get under that, because, we were just sleeping on a rug, which must have been so hard and cold. Oh, no.
Yeah,
but the shop was really great. And then you get to the till, and you're like, because I switched things out. It was really great having those choices, having that limit.
It seems like it was kind of, they perfectly pitched the amount of money that you're able to have at that point and the amount of stuff that you're able to buy.
And so I suppose part of the whole thing is, I think one of the really important things is that this feels like a much more grown-up Life is Strange. It's aware of the political situation in America, which Life is Strange, didn't really deal with anything outside of the little bubble of Arcadia Bay and sort of high school drama, really.
Whereas it's like two white girl protagonists.
Worrying about an art school for competition. It doesn't get much more middle class than that. Whereas we've got a Mexican American family, and these two boys are now runaways, And it's also in the Seattle area, and there are two characters you meet, like a family, a sort of white American family, and you have a conversation with them, and the father at some point says, "Oh, this is why we're leaving Seattle, to get away from the, homeless people, hobos," or whatever they say. So it's aware of the perception of two ethnic minority runaways is different than perhaps if they were, because they haven't been out very long, so they're not like dirty and scruffy or anything, but they're
No.
already seen as homeless
Yeah.
kids, which they might not be if it was Max and Chloe so much, or definitely Max. And there are just sort of little comments that people make about the political situation in America, which I think was really interesting and really great, and really adds to the sort of like weight of the whole story. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out as it goes on their journey.
I think there's definitely a kind of this is why we need to build the wall comment in there somewhere, isn't there?
Yeah, there is something about wool.
Yeah.
What else? I mean, okay, so maybe some of the things that we didn't like so much. Oh, we still haven't talked about Brody,
No, we haven't. He's this kind of
the
sort of
guide.
the, yes, the kind of guide character that we kind of meet at the gas in and around the gas station. He's there when you go in and shop for the first time, and when you meet him, he's like looking at something that's vaguely kind of pornographic on his laptop, which is quite a strange way to introduce a character. I think it tried to kind of wrong foot you a little bit as to make you think, okay, this guy's a little bit strange, but he very quickly turns out to be a very nice guy.
Yeah, he's lovely. He's such an amazing character. I hope we stay. It seems like we're going to stay in touch with him, and he's going to be like a touchstone character, hopefully. But he's really great, and like the one sort of beacon of light in the whole journey, which goes from bad to worse to slightly better, but it's still pretty bad.
I mean, what is it he does? He's a blogger of some kind, isn't he?
Yeah,
He's
he's
a
like a travel
travel blogger,
journalist, or a traveling journalist as opposed to a travel journalist. So he's like one of those like minimalist living, like a small hat, those like he's like complete hipster, like this is a new job that didn't exist like 3 years ago. Like a traveling journalist. So he lives in a van, and he's totally hipster,
Yeah,
and
he dresses kind of like a lumberjack, and he has the like full, yeah, he's and he's just like immediately as soon as you actually start talking to him and get a sense of him, you can see that he's like actually really good hearted, and he's like he's just in a way that is thoroughly believable, and reminds me of people that I have actually met. So yeah, I bought him straight away and immediately warmed to him. So I'm hoping this doesn't kind of turn out to be another Mr. Jefferson situation.
Yeah, me too.
Not to spoil Life is Strange 1 for anybody.
Yeah, me too. I'm exactly the same with that. Yeah, so he was a nice character.
And he kind of he also kind of serves the function of like he's a very knowledgeable, very very wise character. So if I may be permitted to kind of reference the hero's journey, as again, he's kind of the threshold guardian between Sean and Daniel and the adventure that they're going on. He's the guy who kind of stops and says, okay, before you go any further, this is the stuff you need to know if you're going to make a journey like this. And he kind of acts as their, like he's Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. He's kind of, okay, now you know what you need to know, so off you go and good luck, and maybe I'll see you later. And yeah, he just works really well in that role. I think he's not the kind of character that you would expect to be in that role, a kind of young hipster journalist kind of guy, but he makes it his own. I think it's just the beard. I think the beard makes him look wise, and that's all it is.
Yeah, he's a great character. Yeah, so maybe some of the things we didn't like. I'm worried about spoilering things, though,
Okay.
because mine's like specific to a plot point that people might not want to know in advance.
All right, shall we put the spoiler wall down here then?
Yeah.
And from now on, we're going to be discussing kind of the very specific kind of plot things that happen. So if you don't want to hear any of that stuff, don't listen any further. I think we can both conclude by saying that we did both really love this episode. And
Yeah. So if
yeah.
you're leaving us now, just go and buy episode one
And
because it is
then
pretty
come back and
quick.
listen to the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, things that we didn't like. So there's a point at the sort of traveler's rest shop or whatever it is. After that sequence, at the end of that sequence, there's a guy who comes and basically accuses you of stealing, I think, which is really
Yes.
annoying after agonizing in that shop about what you
What?
weren't and weren't going to buy,
Yeah.
and
I
the fact
think.
that I didn't steal
Yeah, you do
anything.
have the option to steal stuff, I think.
Yes,
Yeah.
you do. And so having not done that, to have this guy come up, and yeah, so I don't know if there is a way to diffuse that whole situation, but I didn't manage it in any
No,
way.
I don't think there is. He doesn't.
No.
He doesn't give you the opportunity. You can be as reasonable as you like, and you still
Yeah.
end up detained.
Yeah.
I think detained is the most charitable way of putting it. The guy sort of kidnaps you and
Yeah.
handcuffs you to a radiator.
Yeah, so I mean, that was the only point where I thought, this just doesn't feel like a real life scenario. I just thought it was a very extreme reaction to some kids maybe stealing a loaf of bread or something, as opposed to just, just detaining them and calling the cops or whatever. They handcuff them. I mean, unless it turns out they're part of some weird cult or something, I don't know. Why does he have handcuffs? And why didn't the woman in the shop say, oh no, they just bought a load of stuff or anything?
I mean, there is a bit in that conversation where he implies that he knows who they are and what they're running from. He says, "Yeah, I've seen you on TV. You were on the news report. You're the two kids who ran away after killing that police officer."
Oh,
So he
okay.
does kind of have a reason for doing it, but.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
I,
But.
like, I think. I seem to remember that anyway.
Oh, I don't remember that. But yeah, it was the only bit that I kind of felt it was serving the game as opposed
Yes.
to that it's like, okay, we want to give you this moment to cooperate with Daniel. We want to show the fact that
Yeah.
you can speak to Daniel to get him to help you out of situations and things, and we're setting this up for a future thing that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just felt a bit, yeah, sort of clunky and extreme. It kind of came out of nowhere a bit. It kind of escalated very quickly, I think, from, buying some stuff and eating a sandwich to
Yeah.
handcuffed to a radiator.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I did kind of. I sort of like that bit of it, the bit where he came over, and initially he's kind of. Like, he's not overtly hostile immediately. He is, like, sort of vaguely hostile, but it seems like he's just coming over to see what's going on and see what the deal is with you two. But that conversation very, very quickly becomes a lot more dangerous. And I think that's done really, I thought that was done really well. It's like two or three sentences in that you realize, okay, this guy is actually, that you start to see that he has an agenda under all his
Yeah, he's
questions.
after us type thing. Yeah.
Yes. I agree with you that maybe it is a little bit kind of it's slightly unbelievable and done in the service of the plot rather than the service of character realism, but
Yeah.
I did like it in the moment.
Yeah, I still enjoyed the sequence, but I was just like, what? This is. But I
Yeah.
have receipts, to use the internet phrase.
Yeah.
But I did actually. They're real ones. But
Yeah.
I don't know. There wasn't much else I didn't like, really. I
No.
just really enjoyed it, and I can't wait for episode 2.
Yeah.
But I suppose it might be interesting now that we've put the spoiler wall down to look at our choices and what the differences were.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, well, we can do that from the beginning because I actually have them up on my PS4 as we speak. And, yeah, there's actually kind of a lot of choices that the game tracks. Like, the telltale method was always to just, like, track the five major ones that happened in kind of each thing, but there are about... I think there are about 23 that have been tracked here. It's very kind of detailed. So, yeah, the one that I remember us talking about on the previous kind of recording of this podcast was that there is an opportunity in the first kind of the prologue sort of opening sequence to hug your dad. And I hugged him because he's the nicest guy ever. And you refused to hug him, or you refused to hug him, which I just can't understand why.
Yeah, you're a monster. Basically accusingly were like, you didn't hug the dad after you'd finished the game, because I did, because nobody I knew had played it when after I'd finished, so I didn't see any of your choices.
No.
I was like, but I was going on a date, I was trying to impress a girl, and he was all covered, he was like working on a car and he was covered in oil.
Yeah.
So that was my, because I was like, oh, I might hug him and then I'll get this like greasy mark on my shirt and then I'll never impress this girl. It's like I was going to a party. So yeah, that was my rationale. But you do get a choice to say something nice.
Oh, all right, fair enough. It's not just, no, yeah, I'm not hugging you, yeah.
No, it's not like, get off, dad, loser, or anything. Yeah. So, I said, whatever. I said something nice in return, but I did not hug him.
But and still, I bet you regret that now, though.
Kind of. That's going to haunt my Sean forever.
Yeah.
That's going to be on the therapist's couch. Yeah. I know, I was just worried about the oil stain, but... So what else was there?
Let's have a look through, see what's important. Okay, so, yeah, there was something you were talking about earlier where you kind of come across that middle-class white family who are kind of having a mini picnic on the benches outside the gas station, and you have the opportunity to beg for food for them. I didn't do that, so I didn't see any of the kind of, this is why we left Seattle kind of reaction for it. Because
I think you get a chance for Daniel to get Daniel to ask, and there's this little girl who's the same age as him, and it seemed like they were exchanging glances because obviously it could so easily be her in his position. And I can't remember, because it's, September since I played it, what exactly happens in that exchange. But, I did, I think you go, I went in as Sean, and I didn't get Daniel to do
it. No,
you
didn't.
I was like, I did it myself, and you start saying, oh, hey, where are you going? So you find out a little bit about them, and they're going to Vancouver or something. And then when you ask, they kind of just shut you down. And but Daniel and the little girl do exchange looks. So I wonder if there is a way that maybe if you ask Daniel to do it, the little girl does something so that there's a halfway house. But yeah, the parents shut you down, and the dad says, ugh, this is why we're moving away, to get away from this kind of thing.
Fair enough.
Yeah, which is kind of horrible. It's a really horrible feeling.
Yeah. So there's also, we were talking about stealing from the gas station. What I like about this, we both, neither of us stole anything in the gas station at our first opportunity. What I like about it is that there's three choices there. So you didn't steal anything. There's you stole, or you stole while Daniel distracted Doris, which I like, because you can steal out of necessity, or you can make Daniel complicit in it, which is going to reflect further down the road.
Because
there is that bit where he, I don't know if he did with you, he takes something from Brody's car. He takes let's see if he did on yours.
What is it?
Again, that's a choice as well. There's
he's a book or something.
I thought it was like a dashboard ornament. I can't remember specifically what it was.
Yeah, it is. It is. Is it one of those hula girl things?
Yes. Yeah, I think it is. And that's that's an outcome rather than a choice. But yeah, for both of us, he did, but there is an option for him not to do that.
Okay.
I wonder if that's because... Okay, so after the sort of kidnapping thing, during your escape, yes. You get the opportunity to just give the kidnapper guy a good kick and steal one of his tents, which yeah. we both did.
Yeah.
Because fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck that guy, and we need that tent.
Yeah.
I mean, I was gutted that I couldn't buy that tent, so I was just like, kicked him, and I was just like, and I'm having a tent.
Yeah.
I was just like, yeah, we're sorted now, because I'm so glad I'd bought that sleeping bag, because now I have the whole camping set, and we're good.
But you taught your little brother to steal.
I know, because then the upshot is, he's like, but you stole something, and I was just like, ugh. Well,
yep.
Small price to pay, his moral compass. But yeah, it was nice. Yeah, there was a really nice balance of those things. Yeah. Because, trying to write choices myself and, a game I'm trying to write, I just appreciate how hard it is to choose the choices that you give your player. It's so difficult, and it seems effortless, but it really isn't. It's a real art.
Yeah.
And this game, does it really well, and they proved with season one that they're really good at it. And same again, basically. It was really good.
Yeah.
And then I suppose whilst we're in spoiler territory, we're
not coming back out in spoiler territory. We're not going to stop. Yeah.
No.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
So yeah, so the big, I suppose the big ending scene is the thing in the motel after Brody buys him the night in the hotel, where you finally get to see what Daniel can do. So it's Daniel who has the power, and it looks like in the next episode, because there was like a little teaser, wasn't there, at the end, that Sean is trying to help him control it. So he has sort of, I guess, telekinetic. Telekinetic powers. So he's kind of like Magneto.
Yes. or only just for most stuff.
Yes, exactly. More stuff. He's more than Magneto. And then the big choice is whether you phone Lila or not.
Yes. Well, there are actually kind of two big choices, but let's start with the Lila one. So she kind of has left a bunch of messages on your phone, which, begging you to call her back, because you guys have just disappeared. You've, after your, like, we didn't actually talk about the kind of shooting of Esteban. I think if you've listened this far, you've already played it, you already know about it. But yeah, basically, during one of Daniel's kind of telekinetic... it's before that. It's what triggers his telekinetic power for the first time. There is an argument on the front lawn of Sean, Esteban, and Daniel's house, which involves a police officer pulling up, misreading the situation, and shooting Esteban dead.
Yeah, which of course is another political statement.
And I'm pleased that they weren't kind of shy to just delve into something that is, really happening, really current events. Like every kind of YouTube video about Life Strange 2, if you look down in the comments, there's some fucker going on. I didn't like that they got political with this one, so fuck off. Can't be dealing with this anymore.
Go away now.
how long do we have to have this discussion for? That's what prompts you guys to disappear, and from then on, Lila, who is established as Sean's like very close friend in the prologue, has been texting him saying, "You've got to call me back. What's going on?" And you can choose to, but I think Brody gives you the advice that you need to dump the phone.
Yeah,
and get a burner phone. And you get the choice as to whether to call her back and talk to her, or whether to just throw the phone away. And you didn't call back, and I did call back.
Great. So I get to find out what happens. I love it. I love it that we did different choices.
And the answer, unfortunately, is that there's not much different, I don't think, if you do call her back.
Because we know Life is Strange. They do like to...
Yeah, I mean, perhaps. It's kind of a very... it's a short conversation about, you know, it's what you'd expect. It's her saying, where are you? And he's like, I can't tell you. How long are you going to be? I don't know. They don't exchange any information that they didn't already kind of do through text. And then at the end of that, you still throw the phone away.
Onto sand.
Onto sand. Yes.
I was just like, why are you throwing it there, you idiot?
Yeah.
So that phone is still live.
Yeah.
Still sending out a beacon of where we are.
The thing is, like, I was surprised that, like, before you throw the phone away, finally, you get a thing where... I'd forgotten about this until just now as well. But you look through, like, it's an old Christmas video of you, Esteban, and Daniel just having a great time together.
Aww.
And you can, at any point through this video, you can throw the phone away. You don't have to watch the whole thing. But I was waiting for it to get to the end of the video and give me the option to keep the phone so that I could keep the video.
Yeah.
Which I think, like, knowing how stupid an idea that would be, I still would have done it. You know, it's a character decision rather than a logical decision.
Is that Jason Bourne moment, isn't it? Where he has that photo of his girlfriend who they've killed. And, you know, he's trying to get rid of everything that links him to this place. And he has that photo of them or her. And whether he burns that or keeps it. I can't remember what he does exactly. I think he might burn it. I'm not sure. But, it's just like a really poignant moment.
Yeah.
And it is a shame that you don't get the choice to keep that.
No.
But it is heartbreaking.
Like, the silver lining is perhaps he has it backed up to the cloud. We're never told that that's the only kind of place that he's got.
Yeah,
that
but you will find it again.
Yes.
And plus that phone is
it's there. Like, I don't...
nestled.
I don't think he even turns it off. Like, I'm just going to walk past and ring it. Ah, there it is.
Yeah, he is the worst spy ever.
Yeah.
Worst man on the run ever. Yeah. So, and then the other big decision is how you tell Daniel the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, do you get a choice? I can't remember. Do you get a choice to not tell him?
No, I don't think you do. He finds out because, you have to kind of defuse the situation.
It's on the news or something, is it? He sees it on the TV.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But the choice is that you can either promise him that you won't lie to him again.
Yeah.
Or you can just say you'll try to be honest, like, without committing yourself to it. And
Did I say try?
Yeah, you said that you'd try to be honest, and I promised him that I wouldn't lie to him again.
Excellent! Because
I was like, fucking bring it on, game.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, make me lie to him. What have you got?
Right.
Yeah.
Throw everything you've got at me. Okay, I'm so excited to see where our stories go.
Yeah.
This is cool. Yeah, I can't wait. We haven't got a date yet on episode 2, but
no.
I'm hoping, you know, people listen to this episode, get a bit more into Life is Strange. I know there's like massive games out at the moment, but you know, you can play it in a weekend, and it's a really nice break from, you know, the AAA sort of onslaught that is this time of year. And it is really great. Mm. It's so get into Life is Strange season 2. It's awesome.
It's good so far.
Yeah, I'm excited. I keep checking. I'm like, oh, it pops into my head every now and again because I was like, oh god, it's like been months. It must be. Maybe I've missed the launch of episode 2, but I haven't.
Yeah.
But hurry up, don't nod.
I have nothing to add to that.
So I guess on that note then.
Yeah.
We'll end it here because we've gone pretty long on this.
Oh, so we have.
Yeah. So, that's Life is Strange. We really love it. Let us know when you're into it. And, we're going to do every episode, I think.
I think we might.
Yeah. And, send us comments to the places where we're at.
Okay, so we are on Twitter at ArgueTheCast. We are on SoundCloud and iTunes and Spotify, all under ArgueTheToss. Yeah. Search for us and ye shall find. We're also on GameIndustry.com in the podcast section. And some other places? Or is that it?
Yeah, I think that's about it.
Those are the main ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can rate us and comment anywhere there.
Yeah, if you rate us, that would be really helpful. It would be really nice and kind of you. And until next time, Drew.
Cheerio.